world's not as simple as it used to be. It's not enough to be a good guy anymore. We have to be the best. The time has come. All will be accounted for, or we will hunt them. Stand up. It's time to be the heroes we were always meant to be.
I have been recording for a little bit.
You've been recording, huh?
For a little bit. I've Uncle Ben recording.
John, are you recording?
Sorry, I'm going to laugh about Uncle Ben recording from now until the day I die. So, I don't know what it... Aldo always finds, like, the thing that I was not expecting, and it just will, like, slay me, and I don't know why.
You know, it's Uncle really bad. I'm a serial punner. I pun a lot, and I used to try and withhold it, but I just pun a lot at work now.
You're a punisher. That was bad.
Oh, keep it to the professionals, Steven.
Professionals. I don't think you punderstand.
Did you say punderstand?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
I'm so mad at you, Waldo. Okay. I'm so mad at you, we're just going to freaking start right now. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Superhuman Registration Podcast. Aldo is a stupid face.
Well, this is our Playground Insults edition.
Yes, and John smells like butts.
I have some news about your mothers you might want to hear.
Your mothers?
Hi, my name is Steven. I am here with the Superhuman Registration Podcast. So there is with me, of course, as always, John. Hello.
Hello.
And Aldo.
Hello.
We are a podcast that is focused on the comics that are found on Marvel Unlimited. We read them, we discuss them, we rank them. It's a good time. So we're actually recording this episode a little bit early. We've got the 4th of July holiday coming up, so we are not really doing anything that is 100% timely. We're just reading what we said we were going to read, and we're going to talk about the things that we read, and then we're going to talk about something else, and then we're going to go home and go to bed, and then go eat some hot dogs.
You know, I'm a little disappointed that we didn't really think this through and, like, didn't do some, like, Captain America comic or something.
Captain America features in the Exiles.
Yeah, Captain America is in one of these stories. In fact, I think that's the story we're going to start with. We are reading the 2001 Exiles series. They had a little event early on called A World Apart, which runs through issues 8, 9, and 10. The idea is that there is this strange superdimensional entity of some kind called the Talus that gathers superheroes from multiple dimensions, puts them on a team, and then sends them hopping from reality to reality to fix holes or fix problems in those realities. It's sort of the What If franchise of Marvel Comics, where they tell kind of crazy stories about what if the continuity looked slightly different, if you took that and crossed it with the television show Quantum Leap.
I would say a better comparison is actually Legends of Tomorrow on the CW.
Yeah, maybe, actually, because I have not seen Legends of Tomorrow on the CW, because CW shows make me regress into my adolescent form, and ain't nobody got that much time for that much Matchbox 20. No lie, Matchbox 20, Savage Garden, my two favorite bands when I was in junior high and high school.
I don't know how to feel about this friendship right now.
So the Exiles are, at least at this time, the team roster changes, and it changes pretty frequently throughout the run. The team roster is made up of Morph, a shape-changing mutant, a female version of the mutant Sunfire, a character named Nocturne, who I actually don't remember her history offhand. I believe she is, like, Nightcrawler's daughter.
So she is from a different universe where Nightcrawler and Scarlet Witch had a child. I pre-showed Googled.
Nice. Good for you.
Because I was curious about that. I was like, is this just female Nightcrawler?
We've also got a version of Mimic, who is a mutant who has the ability to replicate the powers of a certain number of other mutants, and it's usually his world's version of the X-Men. And we have, I believe it's Warpath, who in this version of Warpath was turned into the Horseman War by Apocalypse.
No, oh, he's Thunderbird. He's Thunderbird. Yeah.
Oh, he's Thunderbird, not Warpath.
Yeah.
I don't have much history with either one of those characters, but are their costumes pretty similar, or am I not remembering it right?
My recollection of the costumes is they're very, very similar.
And, like, one was killed off pretty quickly after, like, giant size number one, and then the other one came in pretty quickly after that, so it was like, yeah, we killed a character, but then we brought in his brother, like...
That was Thunderbird.
Okay.
I believe who died in giant size X-Men number one. And then they bring in his brother Warpath, and I remember he had a pretty prominent place on Cable's X-Force team. Heck, I think he was on Wolverine's X-Force team, too, fairly recently. But anyway, speaking of...
The more you know.
That's actually more or less the character introduction for Blink. Blink was introduced during the Phalanx saga storyline, which introduced the team Generation X. Blink died. In her very first appearance. The character was popular enough, or at least made a big enough impression, that they brought her back for the Age of Apocalypse. And, again, we're talking late 90s, early 2000s comics that I haven't read, probably since then, but at the time, I loved Age of Apocalypse, and Blink was one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, they also brought her in for the... one of the
Days of Future Past movie.
Yeah, she's in that, yeah. And she's in that film.
And I think she's in the new X-Men TV show, and I just blanked on its name.
Oh, it's called The Gifted.
The Gifted. Yeah, I was gonna say. I was like, I'm not crazy. I didn't imagine an entire TV show and put in like, yeah, because it's the same people who did Burn Notice, and so there's a couple of the same like character actors in there. Yeah, Matt Nix. I was like, you know, I'm like, I'm not crazy. That my. You know, couldn't have put this together in a dream.
Oh. I mean, you could have. I've had some pretty vivid dreams that usually involve Batman villains. But anyway,
yep.
So Blink from Age of Apocalypse was so popular that they basically... I kind of feel like this was the editorial motivation for creating Exiles. They needed an excuse to keep the character going, despite the fact that the Age of Apocalypse storyline had ended and Blink was technically now dead along with the rest of that universe. So they made this conceit where individual super beings were pulled from different timelines. They're usually mutants, like the Exiles. It's got X in the title. This is an X spinoff book. So they were pulled together onto this team, go reality hopping, and that's where we are. Now, this particular story, which we haven't actually gotten to yet, we've just explained the high concept of the Exiles. This particular story involves the team getting transported to a version of Earth that has been completely dominated by the Skrulls, and they are forced to fight in a gladiatorial event until Galactus shows up, scares all the Skrulls off, and then they have to rally all of the remaining super beings on Earth to fight and drive off Galactus. It's pretty, honestly, straightforward story. I don't see a whole lot of subtlety or nuance in it. It's a lot of fun. There's a lot of crazy things that happen in it. And you get some really interesting takes, alternate universe versions of different characters. In particular, you get a pretty interesting take on the Hulk, on Spider-Man. Captain America has some pretty interesting moments when he turns up. Reed Richards is pretty
I was different. Reed Richards,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Reed Richards. And Sam Wilson Falcon is sort of in this too. But... for our team, the major event that happens here is that Thunderbird actually winds up having to sacrifice himself in order to drive off Galactus. He dies right after revealing that Nocturne is pregnant and he is the father.
Wait, I thought he just went into a coma. Spoiler alert, he passed the last...
Oh, that's right, he's not technically dead. He is in like a coma or brain dead or something.
Whew.
Yeah.
That was, we'll get to that, but that was pretty abrupt. Sasquatch just coming in, I'm your team member.
The worst part is I saw Sasquatch, and I immediately thought of, like, the Bigfoot from Monsters Incorporated.
Sasquatch from that. I've been exiled.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Himalayas.
He's like, is this Lemon a bad time? Is this a bad time? Like, I just, that's the voice that was instantly imprinted onto him.
That's, yeah. Sasquatch is actually Heather Hudson. in this version.
That's right. It's a female Sasquatch. I totally forgot about that.
I got to brush up on my Sasquatch gender triggers there, I guess. And
there are no gender signifiers on this Sasquatch.
It's tougher in different medium. Ms. Pac-Man at least wore a bow. You know, that can give you a hint.
Earth 616, main continuity Sasquatch is male. Heather Hudson is another member of the same team. They're both on Alpha Flight. You know, that Canadian team that nobody actually cares about.
Don't they hang out with and or fight the X-Men every now and again?
Yeah, they're technically X-Books too. So anyway, Exiles, A World Apart. What do you guys think of this?
So, you know how I feel every time I open up a book and I'm just like, oh, this is a lot of words.
Oh boy, I have some bad news about the rest of this podcast. There's going to be some reading.
Yeah, eventually Exiles did, like, Chris Claremont came on to write Exiles later on in the run, so, you know.
So, and it's a thing, it's a thing where, like, especially, so I used to read Extreme X-Men back in, like, 2012, no, something around that time. And it's the same premise, bunch of different universes, so it's a lot more succinct. I just feel like the pacing here screeches to a halt so that they could explain a whole bunch of mumbo-jumbo that in two issues just won't matter. And I feel like Extreme X-Men, which came out, like, at least a decade after this, didn't have those issues. So walking in here, it was just like a lot of people start talking and they start giving a lot of explanations. They start doing a lot of things. And it's like, is this going to matter in two issues? Why?
Literally, no.
And if not, why does it matter now? Like, why do I need to sit here and learn about, you know, the theoretical science of Reed Richards? This isn't going to matter soon.
I mean, you're not wrong on that. I'm flipping through the first issue, issue 8, and the first couple of pages are basically an explanation of the Exiles High concept. It's at least slightly more interesting than just an info dump.
Yeah, which is fine.
It's kind of still an info dump. And then once you wrap that up, you get another info dump about the world that they've landed on, and then you get a little bit of action. A little bit of action, and then, like, the issue's over.
Yeah, it's just so much exposition. It doesn't feel like it's worth it. It doesn't, like, there's no real big payoff with it. Like, it just happens.
John, what are your first thoughts?
I wanted to ask how many times we've seen an alternate version of the whole Marvel universe like this. You know, I think of Days of Future Past, where, you know, it opens with Kitty Pryde walking by the headstones of all the big heroes, you know, like Peter Parker and Reed Richards and a handful of others are right there, you know, and we see this alternate future. I guess this whole book would be like that. How many times in the Exiles do they run into, like, other heroes like they do in this book? Or is this just because they're kind of in a gladiatorial arena, is it kind of they're put right up against them? Is this an exception to the normal, you know?
Oh, no, this is 100% the name of the game.
Okay.
They do this all the time.
I'm torn because I really enjoyed the fight with Captain America with, is it Mimic? Yeah, Mimic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he busts out, he's never used Cyclops's I-beams before. It's optic blasts. And just, like, you know, takes out Captain America. I enjoyed that because I was like, oh, that's, yeah. But then I was like, am I enjoying this because really I enjoy the other titles that it's referencing or the other characters that aren't really part of this book? Or is it just good? I mean, I just didn't want to think too much about it and tear it down because it's already, like, the art style felt a little dated to me.
Oh, yeah. That's my biggest complaint with this book.
Yeah. But I was like, you know what? I was expecting something much, much worse because every time I've tried to read The Age of Apocalypse, my brain just shuts down and I haven't, like, really tried and given it, you know, a chance to, you know, make sense to me. And that's another one where the art style is really weird and I just, yeah, it doesn't, I don't know, make a lot of sense, but
That art style is really dated, but I actually really like it. It's so goofy and not serious, and I feel like it really fits the tone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason I love it even more, it's not that it's particularly a great art style. There's a reason it's fallen out of, you know, favor. But I really like Morph. I really feel like the art style suited him and his personality. Because, like, every time he's talking or referencing something, he keeps changing. And I really like the facial expressions he has. I really like a lot of the costume changes he has. Like, I think Morph kind of sold me on this book.
I think me as a kid would have liked that a lot more. I didn't enjoy him in this time. And it was hard because, you know, I was like, if you have a superpower, like, Shapeshifter is the coolest one. You know, that's a really awesome. But it just, I don't know what it was. It just fell flat to me. It just felt, like, lame for some reason.
You know who Morph is? Morph is the genie from Aladdin. Morph is Robin Williams. 100%. Down even to the pop culture references.
Right.
Like, I just remember this bit in the third part of this story where he is poking fun at how paranoid the, like, Spider-Man is and calls him, like, Mulder on weed or something like that. I don't quite remember.
On acid. And it's immediately dated because it was, like, even though they brought back X-Files.
Oh, yeah. Or, like, even when he's talking to him, Reed Richards, he's like, you're the man who could outthink an iMac. You're like, I haven't heard.
Oh my gosh, yeah. You want to talk about dated references?
What's really weird is you know, they apparently the Skrulls have been there for 100 years or more, and, you know, we're still, like, I haven't looked, it's 3 issues, so I haven't gotten into where it's like, oh yeah, the, you know, humans in hiding still have, like, technology and stuff they can pull from, when, by all accounts, by their you know, history that they've come up with, where would they, you know, like, I guess stolen from the Skrulls, but anyhow.
But no, you're totally right. By all accounts, Spider-Man should not even exist.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, if you're going to nitpick that, you might as well nitpick the idea that if you get bit by a spider, you get superpowers.
Yeah. I know, there is a line where it's like,
worth it?
Yeah, and I would argue in this case, no. Exiles is, as a series, just 100% dumb fun. You like weird little comic book minutiae and arguing about who would win in a fight between Mimic and Captain America? Well, here you go. We'll give you this entire playground to play around in. Go nuts. I think a book like Exiles should always be on the stands, and currently there actually is a book called Exiles on the stands that, I just as a side note, the current lineup, I believe, of the Exiles team right now is Blink is still on it, Teen Iron Man is on it, Valkyrie, and this is the version of Valkyrie that appeared in Thor Ragnarok, the movie, basically.
Uh-huh.
Like Tessa Thompson? Tessa Thompson.
What was that? Tessa Thompson.
Awesome.
They had a Peggy Carter Captain America on it. I don't know if she's a member of the team or if they just ran into her once. There is a version of Wolverine that basically comes from the A-Babies versus X-Babies universe.
Nice.
Like, it's wild, it's weird, and it's lovely that it exists. I always want to see a book like Exiles floating around. Because it's comics having fun with being comics, and I'm okay with that.
I liked this. It's this, the whole concept of it is 100% the TV show Sliders, which, yep, I think had come out around the same time.
Sliders is much older than this, if I remember correctly.
Okay. Well, I like that idea, and time travel is fun, and this is fun where you get to, like, what if, you know, everyone was Antelope Man, you know? Like, that was weird. You know, little things like that. That's fun.
It really feels, especially when they have, like, when they just let go and they, you know, mention the Antelope Planet or whatever, it reminds me a little bit of, like, Rick and Morty, where they just go to planets and they're weird and, like, stuff happens. And they don't explain it until they over-explain it, and then I tune out.
Yeah, it was like that, only in a way less offensive way.
Oh, yeah, way less, and way less uncomfortable.
So I think we need to give a shout-out to the creators first. The artists, who we've kind of expressed maybe having some issues with, pencils were done by Mike McCone, inks by Mark McKenna, And then colors were done by a group or a company called Transparency Digital. Pretty common practice in this time, especially in comics. And then the writer is a man named Judd Winnick.
And that's a name that pops up quite a bit.
That's a name I've not heard in a long time. No, Winnick's done the rounds. He's been at DC, he's been at Marvel.
Yeah, that's a name where I've heard it a lot. It doesn't, to me at least, it doesn't stand out for any particular piece of work. But I know I have of several of his issues from runs he's been involved in, and I don't remember anything bad.
I actually like what he does here overall. I think it's fun. It's ultimately pretty inconsequential, except for, you know, like the last 3 or 4 pages. And even then, it's really only consequential if you consider the integrity of the original Exiles team to be sacred, which chances are pretty good you don't.
And you shouldn't.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't necessarily go that far.
I'm saying you really shouldn't get attached.
Well, okay, that's a good point. This is kind of like DC Suicide Squad, where characters drop off on a fairly regular basis.
The whole concept of repairing the timeline is interesting to me. I did enjoy that part of it, and it intrigued me enough that I want to read more, so I'm just going to start at the beginning, and that's what's great about the app, is I can just read the whole run here, and then now there's more out there, and I can give those a try. But the art, we've joked about the art a little bit, but I think that at the time, though, this was like, you know, I don't know if house style is the right term, but this is one that was, you know,
it feels like it's just kind of
in vogue, accepted, I don't know.
It just feels early 2000s.
Yeah.
It really does.
The 90s were really like big, muscly belts and guns. And early 2000s just kind of felt goofy, thick-lined. Maybe too sexy female designs.
I will say, we've talked a lot about faces and facial expressions as we've been reading these books. The faces in these stories land more often than they don't. Especially with Morph and the Skrulls in this story. Like, the artist is having a lot of fun. I'm looking in particular, early on, the team actually gets separated. Most of the Exiles wind up in these gladiatorial games. Meanwhile, Blink and Morph are running around outside trying to get in to reunite with the team. And so they try this gambit where Blink is being escorted into a compound by a Skrull. The Skrull is Morph in disguise. The Skrulls, who are actually patrolling, they pull out the sensor and they register 2 mutants. And you flip the page over, and the Skrull that Morph is pretending to be just has this really cute, sheepish expression on his face. I'm on page 12 in the app. I kind of love that. Serves the character really well. He's going to get more annoying later, but in that moment, he's pretty likable.
I think I'm just the first. My first introduction to Morph was on the TV show.
Mine too.
Where he's like captured right away, and so it's like, oh, this might not be like the doctrinal version of Morph. You know, like maybe I should have read the comics first rather than treating, you know, the 92 series as like the one, you know, so.
I think that's kind of inevitable. My ideal version of Batman is Batman the Animated Series.
Oh, that's just correct.
Yeah. Interestingly, Morph, the character in Exiles, is not the same Morph that appeared in Age of Apocalypse, but functionally, they are exactly the same.
Huh.
To the point where, if I remember correctly, the first time Blink meets up with Morph, in the introduction to the Exile story, she mistakes him for the Morph that she knew. And ultimately, there's no real difference, substantial difference between the two. So we've been talking a lot about the individual characters. I think we need to talk about the fact that Galactus shows up in this story.
Oh yeah, we haven't even mentioned that at all.
Well, like, a little bit, yeah. We talked about Galactus.
Yeah.
Like, everybody has to band together to defeat Galactus. But oh yeah, Galactus is in this.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I gotta say, that was actually a bit of a laugh out loud moment. So they're doing this thing, and they're doing it in like, it's like 3 phases, right? Where phase number 1 is they're gonna shoot him with this giant beam, and it's supposed to weaken him. Because they're expecting him to come in already kind of weak and hungry and starved, and he's not. The second wave is supposed to be a bunch of, you know, Marvel heroes. And then the third wave is supposed to... I think it's just more Marvel. It's just, like, the big heavy hitters. Like, they're supposed to be in there to, like, finish the job, I guess. They hit him with a beam, and he's at full strength, so he's totally unaffected. And the first wave of heroes comes in, and Galactus stares at them, and just disintegrates a bunch of heroes. And it's... I laughed. I laughed out loud. I was just like, wait, what? That's kind of the beauty in, like, these, like, expendable, you know, universe-type things, is that you can do those things. And was it meant to be funny? I don't know, but to me it was. I thought it was hilarious.
That's a sick thing to laugh at, Aldo.
Yep, I just laughed at Captain America going, let's all go fight Galactus, and pew!
I think the bit that's interesting in this fight, you actually skipped over this. So Galactus, in order to devour a world, has to, like, set up all this complex machinery. And so he sets up this machinery, and he sets it up over the tunnels where the Mole Man lives. Oh, yeah. And the Mole Man just, like, runs out of the tunnels, gets all of his people out of the tunnels, blows them up, the machinery collapses, and that's what gives the heroes the edge in the fight. I think that's hilarious.
Does he have to do this in the regular 616 universe? I don't remember him ever setting up a machine.
He does. He actually does. He comes down, he sets up this machinery, and the machinery converts the world into energy, which Galactus devours. That's a normal part of the process.
Wow, that's dumb.
Hey. You are knocking a Jack Kirby creation. How dare you?
I just feel like the real life equivalent would be going to Chili's and me going like, Hold up, I have industrial grade equipment I need in order to eat your food.
The thing is, like, Galactus is very much a product of his creators. And I know that sounds like a silly thing to say, but he's got all of the visual elements of a Jack Kirby creation. Jack Kirby loved these crazy machine designs. He spent a lot of time developing these designs and iterating on them and just getting wilder and wilder with them. Galactus is almost peak Kirby in design, in function. He's great, and he's endured for a long, long time for a reason. In part because I think he actually does manage to set a genuine, sinister presence. Anytime there's a bad situation, it will always get worse if Galactus is involved.
And I think that's one of those things I like about Galactus, is he's always felt like a neutral character. Like, yeah, he feels as bad, like as much a bad guy as, like, a volcano in a disaster movie. Like, that's just nature. That's just what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's just an unstoppable force that you can't really do much about unless, yeah.
Yeah, and even when they defeat him, like, they never kill him. Like, he always just leaves, and he's like, well, I'll come back to Applebee's next time.
That's the way. You just got to convince him that, you know, Mars tastes much better than Earth.
Yeah.
Defeating Galactus, it's always a Pyrrhic victory. Like, it should be. If victory over Galactus is easy, then the character himself becomes more diminished. And that's certainly happened from time to time. Mm-hmm. But in general, I'm always excited when Galactus shows up because of how much the stakes get raised. It's like watching the series Doctor Who, and you get to the end of the season when, ooh, how is all of existence going to be destroyed this time? Oh, wait, no, they're destroying two existences? That's cool.
It's like if you were giving birth and all of a sudden there's a volcano erupting. I have a thing for volcanoes today. I don't know.
So, again, this is kind of an inconsequential story, but I think Exiles is an inconsequential series.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be lighthearted. I think it's really meant for people who like X-Men, and they like a lot of, like, you know, they don't mind alternate universes. You don't actively have to like them. Mm-hmm. But I think this is one of those things where you're just like, I really don't want to deal with continuity. I don't really want to deal with, like, a whole lot of character development. I don't really want stakes that matter. Like, I just want stuff to happen, and I want it to be fun, and I want it to just kind of happen quickly.
It's funny that you say that you don't have to rely on continuity, because you have to know a ton of Marvel continuity to understand what's going on in Exiles.
I don't think you do. I mean, at least based on this particular run, you don't need to.
And I think it helps because then you have more of an understanding of, oh, he just beat that character in a fight, or, oh, this character is acting in this way. Isn't that, you know, typical or so different from what the norm is? I think it also works well when you're making comics. You have a title like this where someone may pick up and then they like a character and they go, well, I want to know more about that character. Then you got them hooked for more comics.
Yeah, but at the same time, how many people saw the fight between Thunderbird and Strong Guy in the first issue on page 14 and then went out and read the entire run of X-Factor?
I've never understood Strong Guy and why I should care about him or his dumb hair and glasses. I just don't get Strong Guy. X-Factor seems cool, but I have no... Anyway.
He is strong and he is a guy.
Ugh, that's really lazy.
And his name is Guido.
Yeah, a million different names, a million different costumes, and a million different looks, and that strong guy. Someone can explain it to me someday. Anyway.
Yeah, you're not anybody here, I don't think. So, final thoughts on this book? I don't know that we actually have that much more to say about it.
I don't.
No, it is what it is. I think it was a lot better than I was expecting based on just the time period it came out in and the art style and the fact that I'd never really heard of it before. And I was like, oh, this is going to be a tough slog. But I ended up enjoying it and didn't expect to. So good recommendation.
Yeah. I do think it is fun. I think it's a lot of fun. I do have one other big grievance with it, though, and it's the covers.
Yeah, they're not that good.
These covers are bad.
Yeah.
Like, and it's funny because if you have Exiles open in the app, you can see, like, issue 3 has Wolverine, like, holding up his fists and his claws are up and the individual faces of the team members are reflected in the claws. Exiles 7 has Morph dreaming of sheep that are all dressed like the different Exiles jumping over a fence. You've got issue 11, just the two issues that flank this story. Issue 11 has Sunfire posing in, like, lingerie in a mirror. The mirror is Morph, and you can see him like doing a little thumbs up thing. Is it, you know, like sexy and sexist and exploitative? Yes. But does it have character? Is it interesting? Yes. Meanwhile, the covers for these three issues are just two individual members of the team standing looking into the camera, and they're not even characters that really have a relationship. The first issue is Thunderbird and Sunfire. They have no relationship, really, other than being on the team. The second issue is Blink and Nocturne. The third issue is Morph and, what's his name? Mimic.
And you think with, like, you know, them fighting Galactus and all these things happening, you know,
you would have,
there's
like
a lot of different cover options they could have, you know, put on there.
At the end of the day, I do think this is fun. I think it's worth picking up. It's not likely to be anybody's favorite comic of all time. It is good, though. It's entertaining, and once it's done, you're just, like, refreshed. It's like, oh, I read a thing, and I enjoyed it.
There you go.
And with that, I think we can move on to our second story. We're dipping our toes for the first time into the Ultimates line. Aldo, you've got this.
Yeah, so up next we're going to be talking about Ultimate Wolverine versus Hulk. It's a story that takes place in the Ultimate Universe where Wolverine goes against the Hulk. It's a pretty self-explanatory title. So the main story here, and it's a callback to Wolverine's first appearance in which he's hired to go track down the Hulk and kill him. Hulk has, or Bruce Banner has been put on trial, and S.H.I.E.L.D. is trying to publicly execute him by dropping a nuke on him, and not realizing that wouldn't work, they made him angry and he escaped over to Tibet. You know, destroying a couple cities on the way. And because of this, Nick Fury and S.H.I.E.L.D. have essentially hired Wolverine, who's doing this for free, mind you, to go hunt and kill the Hulk. And he finds him. And they fight. And Betty Ross also appears, and she's a Green Hulk, which is different from the mainline. And I think they rely a little bit on the mainline continuity to kind of trip. It really feels like a good bait and switch if you're familiar with the continuity. But Betty Ross is there as a female Green Hulk who's smart and intelligent. And, I mean, there's just... Sorry, I'm trying to, like, kind of give the... just the quick details. But there's so much that happens that surprised me as I reread it. So it's a three-way fight between Wolverine, She-Hulk, and Hulk. And S.H.I.E.L.D. drops another nuke on them. And both the Hulks escape, and Wolverine's severed head survives. Nick Fury interrogates him, trying to figure out where they're going to meet up. Wolverine does not tell him anything. He's put back together, and he escapes from S.H.I.E.L.D. With the help of Forge, who has a tuning fork.
Yeah, Forge has a tuning fork that lets him phase through toilets.
Yeah.
That's
but
weird.
But not the water.
Yeah, he comes out of the toilet wet.
Yeah. So Wolverine reveals that he does know where they're going. Something to do with Casablanca. He has Forge make him these necklaces. He goes and he fights She-Hulk, puts this necklace on him that like they invert force. So whatever force you do on it, they won't break is the point. Man, why is this so hard? So Wolverine tries... Wolverine finds Bruce Banner on a plane, telling him to put on the necklace, and then wants him to turn into the Hulk, so that the Hulk will essentially choke himself and die with this unbreakable necklace. And this all has to do with the very beginning of the comic book, which begins with Wolverine in two, his torso and his legs, and he's still angry about this. So they jump out of the airplane. Wolverine frees him because he wants this to happen. He wants the Hulk to choke himself out, but Banner refuses to turn into the Hulk, so he won't let him die as Banner. They find out that Fury is kind of in on the whole thing, and he's kind of been pulling some strings or something, and just kind of lets them be on their way. And that's the story. There's a lot that happens.
It's kind of a mess, guys.
It is. It's so weird because trying to say Wolverine hunts down the Hulk is literally like the tip of the iceberg here.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. You want to know how you know this is a mess? It was written by Damon Lindelof,
writer of Lost.
Yep.
I think that, you know, sometimes it's interesting to do the, you know, interrogation scene after, like, an action scene. And, like, the first issue I think is okay. But then, like, I think they jump around a little bit later on. And it's like, once we're done doing that, then don't do it. Don't keep doing it. You know, yeah, just, like, push on with the story. There's, you know, the movie Casino, which is Martin Scorsese. And it's, you know, a classic and everyone talks. I didn't like it. I saw it on TV a little while ago, and maybe I wasn't appreciating it for what it was, but constant voiceover in the whole thing, like constant voiceover, and that really bothered me because it was like we never really got to see anyone do anything. It was always, you know, stuff was happening with someone describing it as it was happening, and like, I don't know. There was a lot of cool things that were happening, so I think that overall I enjoyed it, but there were little things that kind of could have been better, I think.
The thing I hate about trying to recap the story, and you could feel me struggling, yeah, it's the fact that so much happens, and so much happens out of order.
The whole thing is out of order.
So here I am trying to capture the spirit of this. I can't.
Because, and it's not done in a way like Matt Fraction's Hawkeye, where it's done out of order, but it's amazing how it's done out of order. Like, you look at the Christmas issue they have.
Yeah.
And it's just, that's one where, other ones, it's just the colors change depending on what part of the story it is. That one actually has dates, and it's kind of like a little advent calendar, you know, leading up to Hawkeye defending his building on Christmas kind of thing.
And this one,
this is like, yeah.
It tries to be cute about it, and it's like, you know, 42 hours ago. And then, you know, it jumps to a couple pages, and it's like 2 minutes ago, and then it jumps another page, and it's like 3 days ago, and then it jumps to another page, and it's like 2 days after the other thing, but 10 minutes ago, I guess.
I think that worked when it was Wolverine was ripped in half, and you're like, holy cow, what happened here?
Yeah.
Because that's something I'd never seen before. Like, yeah, he gets like destroyed over and over again, but this is where it felt like he had to go like recover his body to heal himself all the way. And so he was, you know, he was half a Wolverine trying to find his butt. So
yeah, and that's the thing, and I totally glossed over that too, which is kind of the main event here, is that the Wolverine goes and finds Hulk. And this is my problem with the Ultimates. I like the Ultimates. Okay, let me be frank. I like Ultimate Spider-Man.
There you go.
Because it kind of retained a lot of that great innocence and charm of Spider-Man that like came later in the comics, but wasn't quite there in the beginning. A lot of the Ultimates tries to be edgy and it tries to be risque. So a lot of things that happen here is the Hulk getting triggered because people call him impotent. Apparently, the reason he turns into the Hulk is because he's jealous of Betty Ross, and she's told that, you know, 800 people died because she couldn't keep it in her pants.
Oh, hold on.
Uh-huh.
He's jealous over Betty Ross because Betty Ross hooked up with Freddie Prinze Jr.
Yes. Ugh.
This is a plot point. This is a pivotal moment in the Ultimates line of comics that Betty Ross hooked up with Freddie Prinze Jr. Like, we cannot gloss over that fact because that is important.
You know, and then Wolverine finds him in Tibet after he's been trained by a monk named Steve.
Yeah, how? Geez, there's so many Steves.
Yeah, so Wolverine finds him not just in a monastery, but like in a harem of women.
I was gonna say it's a harem.
Yeah,
it's not just a harem. It's a harem like in this village that Wolverine goes to when he's hunting the Hulk. He's like, why are there no women here? And the implication kind of is that the Hulk like rounded up all these women and brought them to his monastery in Tibet. But no, like they're there willingly.
Yeah,
apparently because like, the Hulk is a nice guy now.
They're willingly, like nobody is like trying to escape. Like they're there because they want to be there. Like that's, and I don't want to get into logistics of that, but like apparently Hulk is totally cool with this because of all the sex.
Yep.
Like it's just so many I remember as a teen loving this book, and I thought it was like the coolest thing ever. And because to be truthful, the fight between Wolverine and the Hulk is actually pretty cool. They fight Wolf, like Hulk punches him through a wall, they're fighting out in the wilderness, the Hulk rips him in half, throws one half on one side of the mountain and the other in the top of the mountain. Wolverine has to claw himself up the mountain, finds the Hulk there, and Hulk is sitting there with his legs, and he's like, which half do you want me to eat, the left or the right? Because if I don't, you're just going to like heal and you're going to come after me. So it'll be easier for me to run away if you are Stumpy.
Just messed up.
Yeah. And so but like that.
Yeah, the action still works.
But that's.
Yes.
And really, collectively, that's only about 2 issues worth of fight that happens in this whole story.
Yeah. And then the rest of it is weird garbage like Nick Fury showing off a jar of Hulk poop because the Hulk eats people and then poops out their fingers. What? The whole rest of the story is Jennifer Walters wearing a blouse that comes off if you breathe at it too hard.
Yeah.
So I gotta say though, and her inclusion in this would have been fine. I mean, it's fine. Whatever. It's okay. And I really like that they show you the green, the She-Hulk. And if you are familiar with Hulk comics,
you assume it's Jennifer Walters.
Especially because she's not like a lawyer in this one. She's like a scientist and she's figuring out how to make a tame version of the Hulk serum.
Mm-hmm.
No, and she also peddles black market prints of Star Trek films.
Oh, gosh, oh, yeah. Yes. That's so there's so for every good thing this book does, it does one worse.
I have to go off on how this book portrays its female characters
so terribly.
I'm so mad about this. Like, I already talked about how Jennifer Walters, like, she's just this weird mad scientist. We got male gaze going on up in here. The camera's very exploitative. It's always showing off her bust. It's, like, going down her blouse. You can always see her blouse is just, like, 2 seconds away from popping open. But the comic's just as bad to Betty, too.
Yeah.
The first full-page spread in, or the first panel in issue 4 is Betty lying in bed with a guy, and his hand is just totally on her boob.
Yeah.
That's where his hand is. And then later on in this issue, this is the issue where we reveal, oh no, Ultimate She-Hulk is actually Betty, not Jennifer. The guards on the plane start shooting at She-Hulk when she hulks out, and she starts, like, the way the camera is showing her face and the words she's saying.
Oh, yeah, her whole...
It's a porno!
Her whole transformation is pretty much her orgasming.
And the end of it is like, was that as good for you as it was for me? It's like, who wrote this? A 12-year-old? No, it was Damon Lindelof. We know that. But still, I get so mad. And it doesn't get any better when you start talking about, like, just even the women that the Hulk gathers around him in that weird little harem. Why are they there? That is never explained.
They're just there for Wolverine, the sex, Steve.
They're just there for the sex, Steve. when Wolverine tracks Hulk and Betty to Casablanca, he gets in a fight with Betty in her She-Hulk form, only he ambushes her while she's stark naked. And she remains naked for the whole fight. And it's just really uncomfortable. It's really uncomfortable, guys.
I like I said, teen Aldo, who's like 17, maybe 18, loved this book. adult Aldo, who's 28 and has refined tastes in his pop culture media
consumption. And at least a little bit more respect for women, maybe? And
yes.
Okay, I was like, uh-oh. What are we going to learn about Aldo?
Man, I just have a hard time loving this book as much as I did, 10 years ago.
I don't think this is going to surprise you guys to hear at this point. I hated this book. I actually hated it. Not universally, there are things about it that I like. The action is pretty good. As rough as the art is in this book, I actually kind of like Francis Yu.
Yeah.
I love his art, actually. That's kind of wasn't... I mean, apart from the Gale Maze phase.
The Gale Maze?
God. Jeez, I'm so flustered right now. The male gaze.
The Gale Maze sounds like some kind of, thing that you go... you run through at a fair or something. Yeah.
Apart from that, actually really love the art style. I actually really love that sketchy kind of look. I like that when you have these black figures... these silhouettes, you can see the way they're colored in. I actually really like that because you give them a little bit more detail without actually having to give them more detail. I like that type of stuff.
Interestingly, you know who he reminds me of as an artist?
Who?
John Romita Jr.
Oh.
Who I do not like.
I know you don't like him.
At all.
But I kind of do like John Romita Jr. And I like this. I like Francis Yu. And part of the reason that I like him is because he kind of looks like John Romita Jr. He has his own style. I absolutely do. He's got like a similar scratchiness to his style. His proportions are a little bit different, and his compositions are definitely different. Francis Yu, I know primarily from Superman Birthright, which is probably my favorite telling of the Superman origin story. If there was any justice in the world, that's the version that we would have gotten translated into Man of Steel.
I liked it. Now, is that the one where... at the end, like, there's a message from his parents on Krypton, or he's communicating back to them.
Yeah, he's communicating back to them, and he tells them, I made it.
Yes.
And they die knowing that Superman made it to Earth. No, that's one of the main reasons that book is so good.
And the Luther in that, the version of Luther is very good, too.
Anyway, so I like Francis Yu. I think he does some pretty good work. And, again, like, this is pretty early in his career. I don't think he's at the top of his game here. And the male gaze stuff is a big problem.
Well, like, the more I'm thinking about it, because the first time reading it through, I was like, hey, cool, Hulk ripped Wolverine in half. Oh, they tricked me. Betty is the one who's the She-Hulk in this one. Oh, that's crazy. And, oh, okay, this is, you know, where we get to see the you know, fury that they've actually brought. It was a really weird, convoluted way of bringing Ultimate Fury into the regular Marvel Universe. I don't think it's the same guy, but I think that they, like, made it so that Samuel L. Jackson is Nick Fury in the comics as well as in the movies, and I'm fine with that. Well, I'd never seen, you know, him in anything, because I've only skimmed Miles Morales, Ultimate Spider-Man, which I know I'm a bad person, but, you know, I'm sold. I'm in for, you know, I'll eventually read all of it and collect all of it, but I think that what we were talking about, you know, the bad things here will outweigh the good things. And I'm thinking about where it's going to rank with everything else we've read, and it's not going to be high. Like,
no, it's not.
It is definitely more bad than good. But I do think that, I don't know, I'm still burned over Lost. You know, like three amazing seasons. And, you know, if you look at the first two seasons, great, and then the beginning and end of the third season and parts of the fourth season. So you have in total, like, I think, three seasons of a show that were just, you know, almost flawless and really great. And then just a lot of crap you had to wade through, you know. I don't think that they're the same kind of problems here as far as, like, not knowing the end from the beginning.
I don't know about that. You want to see something that might make you mad, go to the page in Marvel Unlimited where they show you the entire series and look at the publishing dates.
Oh, jeez.
Ultimate Wolverine vs. Hulk issues 1 and 2 came out in 2005. No, 1 came out in 2005, 2 came out in 2006, and then the rest of them came out in 2009.
That is messed up. This is even more reason to read it on an app like this rather than wait for it in the store.
Seriously.
I remember working in the comic book store around 2011. That's when I started working in the comic book store. And I remember getting a lot of people who were looking for that trade who were telling me they'd been waiting years. And it's a popular story, especially back then. It was a very popular story. So it was always selling. Anytime somebody wanted, like, a Hulk or a Wolverine comic, that was kind of a go-to recommendation, which I now have to apologize to people. I'm sorry I recommended that.
It wasn't your fault. It was the time that it was the age that you were in.
So that book I was constantly selling, and I know there were a few people who were like, I didn't even realize it finished. They'd be browsing the collections, they'd be browsing the trades, and they would be like, I stopped waiting and I just moved on.
There's one other aspect of this book that really, really bugs me, and it's a problem that I have with the Ultimate Universe in general. I don't like Ultimate Wolverine.
Really?
I think this makes an interesting contrast with the Wolverine miniseries, because in that story, yeah, Wolverine's a violent individual. He's got these urges, these impulses that he's not proud of, but he indulges in. But at the end of the day, he is driven by this desire to be noble, to be more than he is. This Wolverine is petty, he's completely selfish, he has no interest in helping his fellow man, he's kind of a monster. Wolverine in main Marvel continuity is a sort of a metaphorical monster, but he actually kind of is an aspirational figure, because he's someone who's made mistakes and has learned from his mistakes. He's still willing to go to the mat and do the dirty deeds when they need to be done. But ultimately, he's the type of person who wants to raise a generation that's better than he is. Mm-hmm. Ultimate Wolverine doesn't have any of that altruism in him at all.
He's dirty. He is, like you said, he's petty. He's violent.
He's a skunk.
Yeah. I have to say, I like him, but I like him for that simplicity, not because there's anything deeper to look into. Like, you know, if 616, which is the mainline universe of comics, Wolverine is a finely cooked 7-part meal. This Wolverine is just a Big Mac.
And
I like that sometimes.
He's a Big Mac sandwiched between a couple of those double down meals from KFC, dripping in gravy and injected directly into your gut.
Yes. Yeah, so I mean he's really not a redeeming character. I think there's some funny moments that can come out of it, like in Ultimate Spider-Man. When him and Spidey change bodies.
Oh, I don't think I've read that.
I gotta read that now.
All Peter Parker does is complain. He's like, oh my gosh, like, he just smells like alcohol, he just smells like cigarettes. He's really hairy, he smells bad, like, he's just not happy being in this body. And Wolverine is, who, mind you, is like a 100-year-old man, is in Peter Parker's body, and he's flirting with Mary Jane and trying to get the sex with her.
Oh, I forgot. Ultimate Wolverine, also a pervert.
Yep.
Ugh. Everybody in the Ultimates universe is a pervert.
Yeah.
Except for the Spider-Mans. They're pretty okay.
He pervs one time, and it's cute.
I don't like this book, guys. I don't like the characters. I don't like I don't like hardly anything about it. I've talked about the stuff that I liked. I do like the art.
Okay, I have to ask, though. Did you like that Wolverine's spirit animal is a panda?
No!
You didn't like
what
that?
What the heck? Wolverine's spirit animal is a panda because it's funny. That's literally the only reason it's a panda. It reveals nothing about the character. It contributes nothing to the plot. Why is there
a panda? Steven, it's a panda. It's a panda.
Wolverine's like, you're not my spirit animal because pandas are things for girls. And the panda's like, so? I just, no. No. What's the smoke monster, Damon? What is it?
It's a panda.
Why is there a polar bear on this island? Why do you like bears so much? What's wrong with you?
I feel like there's a lot of misdirected anger still carrying over from Lost into this, because I read it a little bit jaded, like, well, this is going to end stupidly. So, do we have anything more to say about this, or do we need to put it in our rankings down low near the bottom?
F this comic.
Okay, that's a good final word.
Let's start with our rankings. We've got, first up on the chopping block, Exiles, A World Apart.
I think it's going to go after Thor's Battle World and above, so definitely above Civil War, but is it above Thor's Battle World and A-Babies versus X-Babies?
You know, I kind of feel like it's below Civil War. I know we've said before that the fact that they're inconsequential shouldn't matter, but I feel like this is so inconsequential, it makes... For me, it's a detriment, because they put so much work in and so much dialogue and exposition that ultimately is fruitless. It means nothing. And I feel like I had to do homework for a test that never happened.
That's a good point, but I also, I don't know, I think that it's more like a way to hook you in.
In Exiles, Robo-Thor doesn't blow any holes in a giant black man who gets buried in the ground in a tarp and chains.
Okay, well, you know, if we're going to go like that...
Exiles at least has clear... goals, clear intentions. Civil War doesn't know what it wants to be. If my vote is that it goes above Civil War but below Thor's, it absolutely does not go any higher than A-Babies versus X-Babies.
Which is delightful.
I mean, I guess it's 2 versus 3, so I'll concede above Civil War and below Thor's. I'm not happy about it, but I concede to it.
Dude, if it were up to me, Infinity Gauntlet would be number one right now. But it's not, so...
Yeah, because Hawkeye, I'm just going to tell you, it's always going to be near the top. When we read another Hawkeye story out of that Matt Fraction run, guess where it's going to go? Boom, top.
Yeah, we just need to read more of everything, guys.
Yes.
More of everything.
And I'm looking at the years. We have a lot of stuff that's come out in the last 20 years. We need to dig deep, I think. Go earlier in Marvel's history, I think, just to kind of see how far we've come, maybe.
So, Exiles, A World Apart, that puts it 4th from the bottom on our list.
Number 8 out of 11.
Yep, which is, honestly, that's not too bad, because as much as I hate Civil War, it's not like an all-time worst comic.
No. I was going to say, its place on this list is due to your debate prowess and not to any, you know, problems with
it. I'm pretty sure it's due in large part to the fact that Robot Thor blows a hole through Black Goliath and they bury him in the ground in a tarp.
Yes.
How many times have you rehearsed that, Steven?
I don't have to rehearse it. That just comes spontaneously from shock and repulsion.
It's just written in soap on his mirror, and he says it every morning as he's getting ready to go.
It's tattooed on my chest, memento style.
Alright, so where... I'm guessing Ultimate Wolverine versus Hulk is going to be below Exiles.
It's below Exiles. It's below Civil War.
How below?
It's above Eminem versus Punisher, though. That was absolute garbage.
I would rather read Eminem Punisher.
You know, I don't know that I would. I think as much as I hate a lot of the stuff that happens in the Ultimate Wolverine vs. Hulk, I really like that fight. And it's not something I can say out of Eminem Punisher.
Hey, you know what doesn't happen in Eminem Punisher? Two characters wailing on each other so hard that onlookers can't tell if they're fighting or having sex. Because that happens in Wolverine Hulk.
I don't want to see that scene happening between Eminem and Punisher, to be honest. There's no way that it's worse than Eminem versus Punisher. I think the only reason why One More Day is listed below Eminem versus Punisher is because they took Spider-Man and they made it something we didn't like.
I don't like this Wolverine. I do not like what they did to Wolverine. What did you do to my Wolverine?
Didn't put Eminem in the story. That's a good thing. That's a point in the plus column, I think.
Yeah, okay, but Eminem Punisher, they put Eminem in the story and then make fun of him for the whole story.
Yeah, but he punches the Punisher and knocks him out with, like, a single blow.
Yeah, okay, you got me there. There's no defending that. I think Ultimate Wolverine vs. Hulk should be second from the bottom. I do think it's not as bad. I don't know. Oh my gosh, I might hate it more than One More Day. Because One More Day has some really good layouts in it. Like, even with all the terrible things it did to Spider-Man.
Man, I cannot put it below One More Day.
No.
Ugh, no. I hate this story, you guys, but this is a democracy.
You're so angry at this.
You guys want to put it third from the bottom. You want to put it
above Eminem versus Punisher. If you want to argue as, you know, it's six issues as opposed to one piece of crap issue, you have your crap spread out, so there's some good stuff, you know, for every Hulk harem you also get, you know, Wolverine being ripped in half and, like, you know, spy tricks with Nick Fury and no Eminem. That's a big selling point. No Eminem in this book.
And you see, I'd argue that for every Wolverine getting ripped in half, you have bottles of Hulk poop. And weird, sexy, rapey Hulk harems. And bizarre porno She-Hulk. And Jennifer Walters smuggling Star Trek movies. And it's bad, guys.
Yeah, it's bad. Yeah, we're not arguing that it's good. It is definitely bad.
All right. Third from the bottom. We actually have, like, a bottom three that are legitimately bad comics. One of them, I would argue, could be considered a guilty pleasure, but no, they're bad.
I feel like you're more in love with Eminem / Punisher than literally anybody else.
You might not be wrong.
I'm just glad that Hawkeye remains untouched at the top.
I get the feeling the tape is going to stay up there for a while.
It's going to stay up there for a while. We've got to really start digging into some of the all-time greats, I think, to find something that'll supplant that. It will happen. Mm. I just have no idea when or what that will look like. Mm. But it will happen.
What do we have coming up for next time?
So in 2 weeks from when this episode goes up, we will reconvene to discuss the 2012 series Spider-Men. This is the team-up between Earth-616 Peter Parker and the Ultimates Universe Spider-Man, who at this time is Miles Morales. And then we're going to take our first foray into the world of Marvel Star Wars comics by reading the 2015 miniseries Vader Down. I misspoke. It's not a miniseries. It's an event. It kicks off with Vader Down, number one, and then it runs through Darth Vader 13, Star Wars 13, Darth Vader 14, Star Wars 14, and concludes with Darth Vader issue number 15. It's a little tricky to find in the Marvel Unlimited library. The first issue is under Star Wars Vader Down.
It's worth jumping around, because the first time I read it a couple of months ago, I found it really annoying. Like, what's the next part, and how do I get... Oh, I gotta go over, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's fun. And there are, you know, new characters in there that make it entertaining.
I'm actually a little surprised that Marvel doesn't have it classified as, like, an event.
Me too.
Them in that order.
Me too. They've got so many of the other events. Like, One More Day was actually really easy to navigate between those because you could just look for the One More Day event. You can't do that with this one. I have not read this story. I've read some of the Darth Vader comics. They're not bad. They are... We'll get into this. They're my favorite portrayal of Darth Vader. I like it better than the movies. As far as the portrayal of the character Darth Vader, I want that explicitly clear.
It adds more to it, I think, because he's given more to do, and the focus is on him. He's not just, like, the villain. He's, you know, the main character who is a villain. But
they actually manage to bridge the whiny, emotional, insecure Anakin of the prequels with the spacefaring Grim Reaper of the original trilogy in a way that makes mm-hmm. sense and actually deepens the character. For that alone, it's like, hats off, standing ovation, well done, team. Pack it up, boys, let's go home. So, back matter, we got a thing to talk about. They've announced a new DC Universe streaming service, and today they gave us some more details, today being the day that we record this, which is June 28th. They've released some more details. In addition to having television shows specific to the app, it has a bunch of the classic television shows, including two seasons, I believe, of the original Batman the Animated Series, plus the Linda Carter Wonder Woman series, the Superman films with Christopher Reeve. They've got all of this stuff. They are also going to have comics. What are our thoughts on this?
I think wait and see.
Yeah.
It'd be tricky. I don't know. I guess if you're watching something on your iPad, then it doesn't matter if it's a comic. But it, like, on your TV, it'd be a little awkward, I think. But I'd have to see what pops up on there and if it's, you know, something I'd want more of.
I think the part I'm really curious on, and I kind of want to see how they execute it, is at least on this release, on this press release that we're, like, looking at on Polygon, is that they say that DC will offer a rotating, curated selection of thousands of DC comics. Which means it's not going to be, like, a library like Marvel Unlimited. Which is really disappointing, because as many complaints as I have, I love the fact that it is, like, a staple library. It is somewhat curated. Like, there's some stories you can't find, which is, like, the stuff that they're trying to hide because they're so ashamed of it. Like Trouble.
Yep, like Rawhide Kid.
Uh-huh. So, like, I you know, regardless of whatever technical issues I have with the app, I appreciate that at least, like, 90% of comics are available on it. This DC thing sounds like it's going to be a little closer to the Comixology Unlimited, where we might get mm-hmm. specific storylines, specific, like, trades or collections, rather than just a whole library.
For me, this is going to live or die based on the selection of the comics. And I'm probably in the minority there, because I think most people are going to go to it for the TV shows. DC Comics has a pretty strong presence on TV. I mean, your mileage may vary on whether they deserve that or not. I think most of the DC shows on TV nowadays are garbage.
I mean, to be fair, this is going to give me a chance to rewatch Static Shock.
Oh, yeah, Static Shock. But that was the other point. That was the point I was going to make, that the DC animated universe, especially those cartoons that came out in the 90s and early 2000s, those are fantastic. Mm-hmm. A lot of people love the direct-to-DVD animated movies that have been coming out.
Some of the earlier ones I was okay with, like DC New Frontier.
Oh, I love New Frontier.
Or Justice League New Frontier. That was fun. I'd never seen Martian Manhunter before. If this new service contains Batman the Animated Series...
Two seasons is what I understand, which is okay. I'd like to see the whole series plus the new Batman adventures with the new art style. But, you know, you get the first season, you've got Almost Got Him, which is arguably one of the best episodes of any animated television show ever.
Heart of Ice.
Yeah, you get some pretty darn good stuff in there. It's hard to complain about, oh man, I don't have enough good stuff. I just have a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think wait and see is a good attitude. I have canceled my Netflix subscription, and I'll probably be taking that money and putting it towards this for at least a little bit to try it out when it comes out, and we'll see how that goes. And this is the part where Steven hops in from the audio editing stage of the process to let you all know that our recording kind of crapped out on us there at the end, and so this is where we're going to have to wrap it up. If you out there listening would like to submit stories for us to review, you may do so simply by contacting us on social media. You can find us at Super Reg Podcast on Twitter, or we are on Facebook. Either way, whether you submit stories or not, we hope that you join us in 2 weeks, because you are on our list, and that means you're always invited.